The Rich Neil Show was not recorded before a live studio audience because, well, it's a podcast. That's why. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Rich Neil Show. Rich Neil here, and glad you could be with me today. Now, with me this evening is somebody I am proud to call a friend, more like a brother. We'll just go ahead and put it that way. And we have done, I can't even count the hours we worked together as coworkers. In the security industry, the industry that I am currently in now. And when you work nights and other shifts, well, a lot of things happen. And he found something that he wanted to tell me about. So let's bring him on now. Charles, how the hell are you, bud?
Hey, man. So like you were talking about, I was kind of going through my stuff today, and I found that, you remember that old 4-cell maglite that I used to carry everywhere?
Oh, hell yeah. Wait, headache.
You're right. Yeah. I totally That's forgotten.
The name. Yeah.
I totally forgotten the name. You're close to your flashlight when you're working security all alone at night and you don't have a gun. So you get close to your flashlight.
That's why we're flashlight cops. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so I found that, and I noticed that, man, this thing's got a lot of scratches and dents and dings, and there's places on it where it's not even black anymore. And man, I swear, it's just holding it in my hands, just the memory started flooding back, and I was just sitting there laughing, and just laughing at all the stories that you and I could tell about our time working deep nights in security.
Man, that's the back during the Art Bell days. Coast to Coast AM kept us up at night.
Yeah.
And we worked ungodly hours, ungodly shifts. But what a time it was. Mm-hmm. You do bring back a lot of memories when we started. We started way back over 20 years ago. So, yeah, that's like, you remember when I was at that outlet mall there in San Marcos, that the dude in the scuba gear?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was epic. I mean, so what happened is that when you relieve another officer, as you know, late at night for the shift change, if you like that particular officer, you'll hang out with them for a little while.
Yeah.
And so I was relieving the lieutenant, and he was sitting out there, and we were just sitting out there just talking and all kinds of stuff, and and we hear this giant splash, and it's kind of like a big bass or a big fish hitting the water. And we go like looking at each other like, what?
Yeah, and there's no lakes or ponds around there or anything.
Yeah, just a fountain that's that's at the in front of the food court in that quad. It's the biggest fountain there, and we weren't too far. Now, this was so stupid of the mall, because at midnight all the lights shut off, so it was dark as hell out there. And so So we hear this flash, and so we go to investigate, and we get up to the fountain, and it's hard to see in there. So we turn on our flashlight, and there's this thing swimming around it. Now the water is only 18 inches.
Yeah, deep. I was going to say it's at, like less than 2 feet. Yeah.
Oh my God. And there was quarters, nickels, dimes set up all around the fountain. This dude was stealing the money, the charity money from that fountain. And he had full scuba gear on. We're talking
about, you know, when you first told me about this, because I wasn't there that night. When you first told me about this, I was like, get out of here. He didn't have full scuba gear. He had snorkel, maybe.
No, dude. He had the full professional diver down wetsuit. He had the mask. He did have one of those high-dollar snorkels, and he was wearing flippers. He had freaking the water's like 18 inches deep, and he had flippers on. And so he couldn't hear us, and we were like, dude. And finally the other officer just put his thumb over his snorkel. He couldn't breathe. And so he started flopping around, and finally he came up out of the water and he saw us, and he spit the mouthpiece out of the snorkel, and he was like, oh, you caught me. We were like, what in the hell are you doing? And he had a nice car, and I was just trying to figure out, dude, why are you fishing for chump change at a mall that's out of town? You know, because this place at the time, you know, it was a good mile and a half outside of town. It was right off.
He was trying to make that car payment.
I guess so, yeah. And so we got him up out, and we said, you know what? We're going to give you an A for effort. Okay. you went through a lot to try to steal this money. So we're just get the heck out of here. And if we catch you back out here again, you know, it's bye-bye. You know, you're going away. And he was like, okay. And then this is so funny. He started to grab the money, like to take it with him. It's like, okay, dude, put the money
down. That's not what I meant.
Yeah, put the money down and leave. Okay, I'm looking at my watch now. By the time I look up for my watch, you better be gone. And so he didn't even take the flippers off. He was like, flap, 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 flap.
All the way across the parking lot.
All the way out to his car. And he just drove off. And we were just laughing so hard, because it was like, dude, we were just like, this is crazy. This is insane. Why would you put on all that gear in water that's not even 2 feet deep?
Yeah. So wasn't that the place where you worked? I mean, I know the place you worked, but wasn't that when you were working where that one manager, y'all had asked him for a raise, and he's like, well, I can't give you a raise, but I can tell you off the record that whatever coins you find in the fountain at the end of your shift, you can keep.
Yeah, he did. It was like, hey man, we, you know, it's time for a raise. Cause it was like the lowest paid site. And he was like, yeah, we couldn't give you a raise, man, but hey, check it out. There's a lot of money in those fountains after holidays and stuff. Y'all can have it. And we're like, dude, doesn't that money go to charity? He's like, nah.
At least aren't we stealing people's dreams?
We're taking people's wishes away from us.
Yeah, when you make less than you were making, yeah, I think if I recall correctly, wasn't it $7.75? And that was like
$7.75. Yeah, 99.
Yeah. 1999. Yeah. And you're like, screw these people's dreams and wishes. I'm getting my raise.
Yeah, that was, oh man, that place was that was a trip place to work. I mean, I had a blast there, even though it didn't pay well, but getting to know all the store people, but there was so much crazy stuff going on out there.
Yeah, there always was. Always.
Well, you had a couple of crazy stories yourself.
Oh yeah. I remember, and this is the first thing I remembered when I held that old headache, because I remember the scaredest I ever was. Now, of course, you know, this company that we worked for, they did not have commissioned security officers because they didn't want the liability. So we were non-commissioned. And so that meant, and for people who don't understand the difference between commissioned and non-commissioned, it just means that if you're commissioned, you have a gun. And if you're non-commissioned, you don't. And this company was so friggin' cheap that they would not take the sites that required a commissioned officer for fear that somebody would have a mishap or something. And working with some of the idiots we work with, I can't say that I really blame them.
Yeah, there would have been mishaps. Yeah.
But so anyway, back then, you know, I was a captain and what was called the night field supervisor. So my job was to go out and just check on all the posts, make sure everybody's awake, make sure they were, you know, doing their job, sign their papers, see if they needed anything, stuff like that. But also, I would have to pick up any patrol sites that came up, which there weren't many. And then there was this one place, this hotel. And I know you're familiar with the area because I brought you with me a couple of nights. And it was the scariest place I'd ever... There was one scarier post, and we're going to talk about that in the Halloween episode. This is the second scariest post I've ever worked because it was a shut down motel. It was built in I think the late 50s, maybe early 60s, and they had run a construction fence all the way around it. They were about to tear it down, but it took them months to get the permits or something, and they wanted us to do three roll-throughs a night. Now, this place is right around St. John's Avenue and I-35. It's a whole different place now, but the area, as far as I know, still remains the same. That's where all the hookers are. And mm-hmm. the meth heads and the dope heads and the drug dealers and the pimps, that's where they all congregate, right around St. John's Avenue. And so, you know, here's this hotel. They didn't even bother to cut the electrical off, and they want me to do what's called two dismounts and one mounted patrol a night. Well, I was always catching these girls in there with their Johns and chasing them out, and then crackheads galore, you know, because they see, hey, man, this is closed down motel. They still got AC. Man. They still got the AC, the lights. All we got to do is bust in one of the doors. We got a home.
Damn right.
And it was ridiculous. It was so populated in there. And I'd have to get out of my truck, my patrol truck, and go out, unlock the gate, push it open, get back in the patrol truck. And well, let's just say that they hired us to do two dismounts, which means you get in and get out of your truck and you walk the property by foot. And then one mounted patrol. Let's just say they got three mounted patrols a night. Because
yeah,
I fell for the dismount for about the first week, and then I was like, I'm not doing this. Yeah, and that's why that was the first story I brought up with the flashlight, because man, that flashlight, I was always carrying it like a club. I was ready, because the pool in that area, it was like a jungle. They had all these tropical plants and stuff around, and just great places for people to hide. And
So did you ever like walk by that pool and expect to see a dead body floating in there?
Yeah, well, there was actually a funny story with that, because you were there with me that night, because I was
God.
Yeah. I forget the guy's name, but it doesn't matter. He was there. He had been their live-in security guy. So basically this guy was a homeless guy and he needed a job. So the motel at the time hired him basically at like minimum wage, and they would give him one of the motel rooms to live in. And he was still there the first night or two, and mm-hmm. we were told, you need to go kick this guy out because he's not allowed to be there anymore, and he's still living there. And so I remember talking to him, and he told me all about his history and everything, and he was super depressed. that, you know, not only had he just lost his job, but he also lost his place to live. And I kind of like the guy, you know. So I was like, hey, Rich, come on with me. I gotta go evict this dude out of this motel. Oh, yeah. And so we go in there, and lo and behold, that's the night they turned off all the friggin' lights.
Oh, that's right. That's when they cut the electricity.
And we're walking up, and we're walking up to his door, and his door is slightly open. So I've got my mag light ready, and I think you had something. I don't remember if you had just a flashlight or what, but I said, dude, stand on that side of the door. And you said, no, hell no, that's glass. And so I was like, oh, yeah. So I go ahead, and with my foot, I hold up the door, and I shine the light in there, and I couldn't see him. But all his stuff was still there. And I thought, and then it started, I started
remembering. Oh, that, yeah. We were like,
this guy.
Oh, man.
This guy might have just. Yeah, he might have just offed himself. And so I go walking in there, talking his name. And you know, I knew he had a gun. And so I was like, crap, man, what's going to happen in here? And I walk through the motel room, and I'm shining my light. And in my mind, I'm already seeing him dead in a pool of blood in the bathtub.
You know? Oh, yeah.
And thank God, you know, that didn't happen. He'd already left the premises.
He bailed out.
He was probably hiding in those tropical plants around the pool waiting for us to leave, because all his stuff was
there. Oh, yeah. Hey, all of his stuff was there, and probably he knew what was going to happen when that power got cut off.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something funny that just now I remembered, and you'll remember this right away. So as for leaving, I'm sitting in the patrol truck, and you're sitting in the passenger seat, and I'm back then I smoked, so I had the window cracked, and I was filling out my logbook, just sitting there about to leave. And you said, dude, 9 o'clock. And so I look over to my left. I knew you'd remember right away.
Oh, my God.
And so so I look up to my left, and there's this really tall, very thin white lady with blonde hair. And she said, and she came up, and I cracked the window a little bit more. And she said, do you have the time? Okay, so what a lot of, matter of fact, probably 90% of the population doesn't understand, because it changes. They speak in code. Mm-hmm. Do you have the time means is, hey, do you want to duck behind this building and, you know, pay me some money? She's a prostitute. And so I just blurted out, it's like 12:05, see ya.
Yeah.
And then
and we saw her like every time we went up there, and then we got worried about her.
Yeah, we started worrying about it, and we started this unofficial adopt-a-hooker.
What happened to her? Yeah, I remember that.
And we were really concerned about her, because we'd say hey to her every once in a while and stuff. She never was much of a conversationalist, and that's fine.
No.
But, that was a place that I was just so over that post.
Well, you know, especially like when you work – as many hours as we did in the shifts, a minimum of 90 hours a week. And so when you work that many hours and you work nights, particular, mostly during the night, and you are so tired, and I'll never forget Mike, he was working the mall that night. And I was at that manufacturing plant down the street, down the interstate. And you remember those Nextel radios that they gave us?
That was the first cell phone I ever had.
I know, right?
So cool, because it acted like
back in the day. Radio. Oh, that was the bomb. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm about to get off, and I hear this, and I'm like, oh, hey, man, what's up? You know, and I'm talking, and Mike's like, dude, there's a gray monkey out here. And I'm like, what? He said, dude, there's a gray monkey out here. And I said, hold up. A gray monkey. Are you serious? He goes, yeah, I'm serious. It's a gray monkey. You got to come check this out. So it was on my way home. So I go by there. And I'm like, okay, so where's this gray monkey? Well, he took off, but he was out here near the ATM. And he was jumping up and down and everything like that. And I said, are you sure it wasn't something else? And he was like, dude, it was a gray monkey. I said, well, you know, you're on your third 18-hour shift. So
yeah.
you know, and so he was like, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a gray monkey. And we later found out that it was a stray cat that was jumping up to catch these moths. And I guess from a distance, when you're parked out there, it would may look like a gray monkey. But you see things. Like if you walk by those stores and you're really tired and you're walking down the storefronts, if you stare at a mannequin long enough, it'll move.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember. I swear, every time if I was in there working by myself, I'd walk past one of those stores and I'd see a mannequin. And every single time I thought, man, did that one just move?
Was she looking at me earlier? Yeah, those mannequins, man, you could have swore they move. But nothing is as scary as what we came across behind that mall after that storm. You had come out there to help me finish this ungodly shift.
You're talking about the little guy.
The little guy. The world's meanest little guy.
Yeah, so I was about to go home. I'd already been on like a 12-hour shift. And like you said, back then we worked for so little money. And as a matter of fact, my wife and I had a thing we called the bill lottery. So every 2 weeks we would put all our bills in a stack and blindly pull one out. And that would be the one that didn't get paid that time. And so, yeah, when you said we worked a lot of hours, I mean, you ain't lying a bit.
Oh, we did.
Amount of hours I worked in like a one year period was like 60 hours. And that was like me taking it easy.
Yeah.
I'd come down there to check on you, and it was my last sight. So I was going to hang out a little bit with you, but I didn't know you were on duty still. So I was like, I'll go check out the mall, and I'll sign the paperwork, talk to him for a minute, and I'm heading home because I'm tired. And when you get there, because I'd already been there once that day, early in the afternoon, and I pull up, and you're standing there grinning at me, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing here? And you said, well, I've been here since before you came by earlier. And I said, well, where's your relief? And you said, well, there's not one. And I said, so that's going to put you on for 24 hours. And you said, yeah. And I said, well, I'm not going to let you do that by yourself. So I'll hang out with you. And the original plan was I'll sleep for an hour and then you go on patrol. And then you sleep for an hour and I'll go on patrol. And that way they'll have constant coverage and neither one of us has to kill ourselves.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, but since we were such good friends, neither one of us ever shut our eye. We just loaded up in the patrol truck and started making our rounds. And
we did.
And we were so, I think it was probably after about 2 a.m, we were like
Muhammad the goofy Ali. Hour.
Yeah, we were like punch drunk at that time. We were laughing.
Everything was funny.
It was almost everything like we just smoked a big fat joint.
It was like, you see, the fire hydrant was funny.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like everything was funny because we hit that goofy hour and it's like you've been up for so long. But
and now you can't go to sleep. Your body will not. No, your body will resist sleep at that point. So we're coming around the corner and we're going behind the mall. And since I'm down there, you know, we're taking it easy. We're in the patrol truck. We're air conditioning everything. And I was like, dude, Rich, look at this. And it was a crawdad that has.
I know. It's like. When we come around that little curve and our lights hit it, and this was a big ass crawdad. This ain't no joke, man. This was like,
yeah, it was like 3.5-4 inches long.
Dude was huge. It was like, our lights hit it, and it reared up and it put his pinchers up, and it was looking at us like, come on, come on, just
I dare you. I'll pinch your tires right out.
I'll flip your truck right over with you.
And we were so punch drunk, we were laughing until we were crying. Oh, and my. We literally just sat there until this dude finally got back down and crawled and finished crawling across the road.
We were scared to drive over it.
Yeah.
he was gonna hurt us.
Yeah, and so later that night, you know, we're telling stories, we're keeping each other awake, and there was this one shortcut that I had come up with. I forget what part of the mall. It was like, I think it was right off the food court. There was this little breezeway. And I said, well, let's take this shortcut and let's go around the back. And I get up there and you said, dude, are you sure about this? Will the truck fit? Well, it was a 99 Ford Ranger, you know, so it was pretty small. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll fit. And then we get up there, and I'm inching forward, and this is like my Austin Powers moment with the golf cart. And finally, thank God, something told me, no, don't do this. And then I kept thinking, man, they'd be waking us up in the morning. We'd be stuck in this truck. They'd have to bash out the windshield because we'd have the doors blocked. And then there was that one time, this wasn't the same time, but there was one time I came down there and you said, dude, you want to feel something cool or see something cool? And I said, yeah. And you see, he said, get in the golf cart. So this particular mall has these very long, long arcades, covered walkways that go by all the stores. And there's arch after arch after arch. And you get me in that golf cart and you said, dude, whatever you do, keep your hands and feet inside at all times. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And so you laid on it. We're probably going, I don't know, 10 miles an hour.
Maybe at best.
It was going downhill, so we're probably clicking along at a good 15 miles an hour. But, I mean, it was so tight. And that's why you said keep your hands and feet inside, because these archways and these pillars were just sailing past me.
Man, it feels like you're doing 90.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think we might have set the world record on how fast you can drive a golf cart. And then I was like, I was so happy when you finally quit, because I was actually like, oh, dude, I'm scared. And you're like, you want to try it now? I was like, hey, yeah. And the whole time you're hoping, you know the mall's closed, you know the stores are empty, but you still got that feeling in the back of your neck. What if somebody comes out of one of these doors?
Uh-oh. Game over for both of us.
For all of us.
Yeah. Man, that was a trip feel, man. It feels like you were almost in like one of a time machine or something, because everything was a blur going by.
Yeah. Man, it was a rush. I guess that particular mall didn't have any idea we were doing that.
We were. It was. You remember we were so broke that. Remember that time that we both at the same time saw that $10 bill in the parking lot.
Oh yeah, dude. We saw it together, but you managed to pick it up first. And I'm like, dude, I saw that first. And you said, no, I saw that first. We're just about to end our friendship over a $10 bill. And you're such a freaking good guy. You're like, dude, I'll tell you what, I'll order a pizza and we'll split it. And I was like, hey, that works.
Hell yeah. Yeah. We ate good that night.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. I remember.
No bologna sandwiches for us.
Yeah, I used to bring freaking potted meat sandwiches to work in a bag.
Oh my god! Spam. And,
remember that time that I got paid twice by mistake? And
you did win the lottery.
Oh yeah, it was. It was like, oh my god, I can actually pay all my bills and still have like $20 left over.
But you were like, come on. We're going to go get cheeseburgers across the street.
Yeah, Whataburger.
Yeah, and you were like, and we're going for double meat tonight.
Yeah, we got back over to the mall. We were eating our double meat cheese Whataburgers with, and these were Wata size with a half-gallon Coke and everything.
Oh, man.
And then, we started, you know, of course, we weren't used to eating that much.
No.
So we started getting drowsy, and I'm like, come on, let's go back to Whataburger and get a big ass coffee. Yeah, that was a good time. I guess they never caught it either, because I remember thinking, you know what? I don't think they ever did catch it, because I kept wondering if they were and they were going to try and take it all back at once, but they never did.
No, nope, so they never caught it. See, you won that one.
Yep.
Yeah. That was it. Hey, you were telling me we had this one site and there was a new guard out there and Carl wanted you to go check on him?
Well, yeah, you're right. It was him. This was like, so I had been a lieutenant and then I got promoted to captain. And
that's when I got lieutenant.
Yeah. And that was like my third night being the night field supervisor. And there was a place in South Austin. And you go down this long driveway, take a left, and then go down another long driveway. But now, by this time, you could see the guard shack. And the guard shack lights were supposed to be on at all times. And sometimes I would tell the guards, you know, I get it. You kind of feel like you're somebody's target sitting here in a lighted, you know, box. So if you want to just have a little lamp on the table, keep it on, that's fine. Well, I pull up and I was with another person and he said, he stopped and he said, well, because he was driving, he stopped and he said, where the hell is he now? And I said, oh, look, dude, there he is right there. He sits right there behind the desk. You don't see him? And he looks at me and he kind of shakes his head because, you know, this is my third night on the job doing this specific job. And he'd been doing it because he was fixing to go away to another site. And he looked at me, shook his head, and then he pulled up. And then we look in. We're shielding our eyes to look in and get a better look. And I'll be damned. And I called it. Well, I'll tell you in a minute. This guy had taken the fire extinguisher and put it on the desk, which was right at the base of the window. He took his uniform shirt off and wrapped it around the fire extinguisher. And he put his security guard hat on top. And I'm like, what in the holy crap is going on here? And so I was willing to give this guy the benefit of the doubt because I thought, well, maybe he's inside making his rounds. And then so we're looking around and, you know, you can't really get to the door because the gates are closed. So we had to climb over the fence and then peer into the door. And mm-hmm. there this dude sits in his pajamas with a freaking with a pillow and a blanket that he had brought from home. And he's asleep on the floor. And this other guy beat on the window so hard. And the guy just raises up and he points at us and he says, ah, you got me. And I was like, what the heck? You dressed up a fire. So since then, he's always become the fire extinguisher dummy guy.
Oh my God.
And believe it or not, he didn't get fired that night because we were so hard up on security.
That was crazy because you would come across some of the dumbest people, bottom of the barrel, but you know, you get what you pay for. So luckily me and you were at least we were competent. So there you go that. But
and you and I always tried to maintain a level of
professionalism exactly. Yeah. And so but you just see so many weird things that happen on a lot of these posts, and one of the most incredible events that I can remember out there at the mall was somebody had put two boxes of extra strength Tide laundry soap, the powdered laundry soap, into that big fountain.
Yeah, the same one where the scuba diver was
at. Yeah, the scuba diver found. And now they did it before the mall closed in the afternoon. So by the time the mall closed and I was doing my I did the car counters and stuff. I was just walking around and I saw the phone build up and I was like, I started laughing. The old soap in the fountain thing. But I didn't realize exactly how much they put into it.
Yeah.
And this monstrosity growed. There was no wind that night. It was a dead summer night.
I remember it was like a three-story building.
Dude, it got up to over 40 feet high.
Yeah.
It covered the whole quad.
We were carving caves out of it.
Oh, man. Because it would fold over and it would make these caverns. And I'll never forget because before I called you to have you come out and look at it, it was like the San Marcos police officer that worked at the mall. There was a substation there. And he did a drive-by just to see what was up. And so he was driving by, and I said, dude, you got to come and check this out. And he walked around the corner, and he was like, what the hell? And I was like, I know, right? It's so freaking cool. And I took him in there, and we set flashlights inside the little caverns, and it lit up, and it was just a trip. And so he was so, like, excited about this that he called the other officers on duty, and he said, man, if you're not doing anything, I need you down here at the outlet mall as soon as you can for a non-emergency call. And so another officer comes in. And so there's three of the SMPD guys there, and they were just tripping out on this thing. And they were like, man, this is trip. Well, the sheriff's department, we had Trinet back then, and Trinet was like all law enforcement agencies had one channel where they could communicate with each other. And so they were broadcasting over TriNet, and the sheriff's department picked up on it. So this one unit was driving by, and he goes, let me go see what's going on at the outlet mall. And all these people are calling. And so he came over there, and he was like, no way. This thing kept getting bigger and bigger. And so he called another deputy, and she came over there. So now I had like five law enforcement units out there. And then DPS picked up on it, and they were like, okay, you know, because it was like, there's something going on out there. I got to see it. So he came out there, called his buddies, and they were out there taking photographs. They were in there like they were in an ice cave, and they were cold, and they would sit down like they had a fire built warming up. Yeah. It looked like you were in the Antarctica. And then when you came out there, it was like, that was the most protected mall on the planet that night.
Because, I remember, because I pulled up and I saw these freaking cop cars everywhere, and I'm like, I don't recall getting a call. What's going on? No, you had called me, but it didn't sound like it was anything big. And so I just kind of, and I'm like,
I wanted you to drive up on it, because it was such a sight to see. I didn't know soap bubbles could do that.
Yeah,
but that fountain kept generating and generating, and it had veins in it, and you could see where, like, water was flowing through the structure of this of the stuff, and they took pictures, and all that whole night they kept coming back to check on it to see if how bigger it got before the whole thing just caved in. It got so big, and then the wind picked up and blew like the top of it over the parking lot, and it swallowed a couple of cars and then swallowed the Nike store completely. You couldn't get into the Nike store without going through it. But you just see some weird stuff when you were,
you know, something you just said reminded me of another story that you had told me. I wasn't there that night, but it just reminded me, because this particular thing took place in around the same area. You remember the popcorn stand?
That's Dan. So, because it was so weird, because the guy who owned these kiosks for he had like two or three of them, and they were little popcorn little kiosk, and it reminded me of the old photo developing booths back in the day. And so he would hire these 15-year-old kids to work it part-time throughout the day, so he never had to pay like insurance and all that stuff. He was using child labor is what he was doing. And at the end of the day, when they were closing up, these kids, you know, were in a hurry to get out of there. And one night the kid left, but left the popcorn machine on, the big kettle, and it had grease in it, and it was started to smoke real bad. And I couldn't get into it. The door was locked. The windows were locked. So I said, well, you know, shit, I'm going to go call the owner.
Yeah, it was like a little imitation of like an old West wagon. I think it was red, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And it wasn't like on fire or anything, but it was smoking. And I knew that. And I could see the machine was on. The light was on. And so I was just going to have to bust the window to turn it off. But I said, you know what? Let me call the owner. And he was like 30 years old, party animal, single guy, owned kiosk all over the both the malls. But back then we didn't have cell phones.
Right.
So what we had to do.
Well, I mean, cell phones were around. We were just too poor to have any.
Yeah, and our company didn't give us any.
Yeah. That's
so, right. And so it was like, okay, I'm gonna have to use the payphone. And so I went to the payphone and I made a collect call to this guy. And so when you make a collect call back then, the operator would come on and you would say collect call, and they'd say at the beep, say, you know, your name.
Yeah.
And then you do that. And then they call the party and say, and then play the recording. They say, you have a collect call. Yeah. You have a collect call from, and the name, would you like to accept the charges? So I'm sitting there listening to the phone, and the dude answers it now, and he can't hear me until the operator flips the switch. But it was like, you have a collect call from mall security. Would you like to accept the charges? Click, and he hang up. And I'm like, what the? So I did it again, and he picked it up, and you could hear music in the background. So he's probably at the club, and he hangs up again. And so I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, you won't play this game. No problem. So I called it back again. And when they said, at the beep, say your name. And I said, your shit's burning down. And so he gets on the phone. And it's like, you hear, you have a collect call from, your shit's burning down. Will you accept the charges? Yes, yeah. Yes, I'll accept.
I said,
dude, when I call you, it's not because I want to bullshit with you. It's something going on. And I said, yeah, your booth's about to burn down. And he said, yeah, break a window. What the hell? Before it catches on fire.
Yeah, and possibly burns the rest of the friggin' mall down.
Yeah. So I went in there. I flipped it off. And, of course, I opened it up and it, cooled down and ventilated, but there was like a little oil in there. And I was like, yeah, that was just going to burst into flames.
Yeah. There was always something. And, I couldn't stand watching those movies. Of course, movies like Paul Blart and stuff, that all came out way later. But I remember being so irritated whenever, this action scene or something, and there's this security officer and the dude's always freaking asleep behind the desk. And the ninja team just runs right past him and he never blinks an eye or anything. And that stuff used to piss me right off. Cause I mean, this is what I did for a living and I'd worked myself up to a pretty high ranking rank. But after all that and thinking back on all the times, all the nights that I'd worked up there, unfortunately Hollywood's got it pretty correct.
They do.
I really hate to put that out there like that because I spent probably 15 years of my life doing that work. And I was very proud of it. And I was dedicated to it. Somebody hired me to do a job. I'm going to do it to the best of my ability.
And that's the thing, because it was only going to be, for me, temporary. I had just gotten out of the military. Mm-hmm. And I had 3 months of what they call terminal leave at the time, where I just take 3 months off. I didn't have to do nothing. Well, when that leave was on it ending, I said, well, shit, I better get a job. And so I would get the green sheet from the coffee shop there in San Marcos. I was staying there at the time. And I was looking through there and I saw this want ad from this company, from Burns. And so I said, hey, you know what? I'd done security a long time ago before the military. So I can do this temporarily until I find something good. And so I'll never forget this, dude. I went down there and filled out the application and gave it to what's her name that was at the front desk. She was there for a long time. But she said, okay, well, we'll call you. And I was like, okay, cool. And then Jeff. Jeff came up and saw it and said, hold up, wait. You live in San Marcos? I said, yeah,
that's all he needed.
That's it. He was like, well, come on back, man. And so I went to the back and I told him, yeah, I just got out of the army and I just need something to hold me over for a little while. And he was like, oh, okay. And let me tell you what, I need you to watch this film real quick. And so back then, as you know,
you went to work that night.
The new hire orientation was a 3-hour video on bloodborne pathogens. And the whole time the video was playing, he kept bringing uniform stuff in. And so he fitted me with these uniforms. And so I'm not thinking much of it. I thought, okay, well, he's going to, let me know what was going on. And he's like, so what are you doing this evening? Jeff. Well, and I was like,
talking with his hands.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know just yet. I hadn't made any plans. And he was like, well, you see, I kind of have this problem in San Marcos. And you think you could be at the mall at 5 this evening. It's like 3 o'clock now.
Yeah. In other words, drive from here and just don't even bother going home. Just go to the mall.
Put the uniform on and go to work. So, and I did that. And I went, you know, that, and that was such a piss poor paid site. And because he had me pegged to go to Motorola in Seguin because it paid more. But the captain, area captain there, Lefebvre, he was like, "No, you don't want to go there. The supervisor over there is she's a moron. You don't want to go over there. You don't want to work for her. What you want to do is you want to work here." And I said, "Nah, dude, this doesn't pay work. Nah, there's no way." And he was like, "No, but check it. We got 3 sites here in San Marcos, and they all pay differently. And so, and there's so many hours available, you're going to make all kinds of money." So I was like, he says, "You'll make more than if you go to Seguin." And I was like, "Yeah, okay." So he called up Jeff and said, "Yeah, he's going to stay here in this area. He's not going to go to Seguin." And so that started that. Yeah. And that temporary thing turned into, oh God, 15 years doing that, working for that company, working off and on. And, you know, of course, I worked for the city for a while and doing security. But yeah, it's amazing. You just it you know, gets in your blood sometimes, and it's like, and I'm still in that industry today, but at a way higher level, of course, a federal level.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just amazing. But you remember those times when you worked 24 hours and these long shifts with these short turnarounds and getting called out here and there. Yeah, man, that was insane.
For like a year straight, because I lived at that time, I lived in Bastrop. And so I was working 7 days a week. And I think I worked 7 days a week for almost a year or just out a year. I can't remember, but 80 hours, 90 hours, 95 hours sometimes. And you know, I never fell asleep on duty. Not once. There was one time that I tried to go to sleep. And that was the winter of, help me out here. Do you remember what year that was? Probably 2001. 2001?
No, because...
Oh, yeah, it was later down because I was working at the other place.
Remember, we transferred down to the Gulf Coast in 2003.
To the Pasadena office, and then
in 2003. Seabrook office.
So this was... Okay, so this was 2005. And we had a severe ice storm blow in. And at this point, I had ceased being the night field supervisor, and I had gone out to a post that was closer to my house at that time, which was on northwest of Austin, way out of town. And I was like, you know, I don't want to drive all the way into Austin every freaking day. This is getting old, especially for the money y'all pay. And so I picked up this really cool gig at this brand new, very exclusive gated community type thing. And I mean, it's a who's who of residents out there. It's amazing.
Oh yeah. Jack Nicklaus golf.
It was Jack Nicklaus designed golf course. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And so I said, that's where I want to go. And you know, a couple of months into it, I guess, I'm working and I sat down in the guard check, and I mean, this guard check was freaking, it was, I think they told me it was $180,000 to build this guard check. Cause it looked like a little tiny villa in Florence, Italy somewhere. I mean, they spent a lot of money on this, and it had a full front room and a full blown kitchen, a big storage room and a big old bathroom. Felt like you were sitting down taking a crap in the middle of a gymnasium. I mean, and it was so freaking cool to work there, seeing all these real rich and famous people coming by and getting to know them, you know? Anyway, that's a long way to start the story. But I remember I'd gone to work, and I think it was 7 o'clock at night, and I was supposed to get off at 7 in the morning. I showed up, everything was cool, it was cold, but at about midnight, it started snowing. And you know, Central Texas, we get snow maybe every 8-10 years, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
And usually it's gone by the morning time anyway. So I'm out there just enjoying it, you know, walking around, feeling it, hearing it crunch between my, you know, feet and stuff like that. And I think I was trying to take pictures or something, but because I knew it'd be gone by the morning. So I'm sitting there and I'm driving around the neighborhood, you know, doing my patrols, my toco hits, what I like to, a mutual friend
whatever.
Of ours. Yeah. Mutual friend of ours used to call that our electronic leash. That's basically where you have so many places you've got to hit, and you go and put that thing up there to prove that you actually made your rounds. I mean, this is the kind of crap you get with contract security, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I did my rounds and everything. And I went and ate lunch, which was probably 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And all of a sudden, it just started coming down like crazy. And I ate my lunch, hung out for a little bit, enjoyed the snow, went to get in the patrol truck, make my last round of the neighborhood for the night. And I got to the, I pulled it up in front of the office there. And I remembered I'd forgotten to close the door or lock the door. That's what it was. And I got out to lock the door. I came back to the truck and the truck would not move. It was literally, it didn't have any friction to go. Everything was frozen over. That truck sat there for 4.5 hours.
Yeah,
or five
because
hours.
I remember because I was working that night too and got trapped. It snowed and then it just started raining ice because the temperature dropped so much. And it was weird because it was a heavy ice storm.
Yeah.
It wasn't no joke.
Yeah. And I was talking to you because we were working the night shift.
Yeah.
And then you'd already gotten trapped there for summer. And probably somebody didn't show up for work or whatever. But then.
No, what happened was, well, there was two of us there because Daryl called me. I got off at 8 that morning. And then he called me at 2 that afternoon and said, look, we're expecting some bad weather. And I want you to be here so you don't get stuck where you can't get out here. And because his wife was expecting. And so I was like, you know, okay, I'll come back out there and you just go home before the storm hits. And so, yeah. So go ahead and finish up because I'll tell you.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I finally, you know, and then I worked the whole next day because nobody could get out there to relieve me. And because it was out in the country at the time, well, it still kind of is. It's growing pretty fast out that way, though. And so I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll hang out for another shift, knowing that was going to put me on a 24-hour nonstop shift. And I'm like, I'm thinking back to the days when me and Richard were down there fighting crawdads and trying to squeeze the truck into places we shouldn't. And I'm like, dude, I've totally done this before. But it was worse because I was by myself. I didn't have you to help keep me awake. Well, at some point, so I did all day long, and somebody's going to try to come out and relieve me to do what was supposed to be my next shift, but they couldn't get out there. And so I worked, I believe it was 28 hours straight before the other guy could get out there. And during that time was the only time in my entire tenure working for that shitty company that I actually said, you know what? It's frozen. The crooks are at home. Everybody's frozen at home. I've got to take a nap. And I didn't care if anybody caught me at that point because, one, who's going to come out there to catch me?
Exactly.
And two, anybody who does catch me knows that I've been on for over 24 hours straight. So I'm like, I'm going to throw some jackets down on the floor in the kitchen and lay down and just go to sleep. I laid there for probably 20, 25 minutes and just couldn't go to sleep. So the one time I did try to go to sleep.
You couldn't.
I couldn't do it.
And you're like all mad. You're like, God.
No, yeah, I was furious. Yeah, and then finally got out there and relieved me. And I started to drive home. And, of course, everything's still frozen over. And I was driving that Chevy S10 back then. It's real light in the back. And I'm driving home. And I'm going through Liberty Hill. And it's a five-lane highway. And all of a sudden, I lose control. And I'm doing 360s and I'm going into oncoming traffic. Now everybody's doing less than 10 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still coming at me, but they can't stop, you know, and I can't stop. We're all just lost control. And finally, I guess God just decided to push me back over. He pushed me over a little too hard, and I went in a ditch. And I was like, man, you know what? I'm done. I'm going to sleep right here. And luckily, I did try to get out, and I was able to get out of the ditch and get home. But I went home, and my wife told me that I started stripping down from the front door all the way through the living room, the dining room, down the hallway, and into the bedroom. She was picking up my clothes, my duty belt, my boots, everything. I didn't remember anything. When I finally pulled into the last thing I remembered was pulling into the driveway and getting out of the truck. And that was all I remembered.
That was it. Game over.
It was done. Yeah, I fell in the bed, and I don't know what time I woke up.
Because the same night when I was out there, when at the height of this storm, now the alarm went off in one of the stores, which automatically calls the police department. And I could hear the audible alarm, and I was like in the Chernobyl, and that's what we call it. Yeah, well, that's what we call the office because it was an electrical room.
And these big transmitters, transformers. And it was the only place to hang out in the cold winter because it was
warm in there. And so I'm sitting there and I hear this whoop. Whoop, whoop. And I'm like, oh my God, there's no way. That's got to be the ice, you know, pounding on the windows. And I said, well, the cops will probably be coming out. So, you know, the movies when they're showing a scene from a outpost in the Antarctica where it's wind is blowing and it's snowing and it's like 18 below zero. That's what it was like. And it was rain and ice. And so I'm putting on all this freaking gear to make this trek across this frozen tundra parking lot, ice skating across it pretty much. Mm-hmm. And the cop comes in through the back way and he meets me there. And so he was like, oh, he says, God dang it. And we looked through all the windows. There's nothing going on. There's not, you know, all the doors are secured, windows are fine. So we called the key holder. Don't try to come out here. It's the weather's too bad. And so they were like, okay, but they're already halfway out there. And so we were like, God dang. So he said, let's sit in the squad car. We'll wait. And so the key holder skated in, and it was like, went into the store, everything was okay. And so we went in there with them to walked around, checked the whole store out, everything was cool. And so she left and locked the doors up, and she had parked in the like a grass area. She was able to pull out and get some pretty good traction and leave out the back exit. Now the officer parked in the front of the store. And he could not, he's just spinning wheels. Yeah. He wasn't going nowhere. And so he called dispatch and they said, well, we can't send anybody out there. The interstate's closed. And we were like, oh my God. So I said, come on, you're going, let's go back to the office. So he went back to the office. I fixed some coffee and he had to stay out there all night. He was stuck out there until the next day. But yeah, man, that was a 5 hours. I think I was out there for like 25 hours, but man.
Yeah. And just talking about that night reminded me that a lot of your listeners are probably not from Texas and they don't understand what it's like for us when we get a big ice storm. I can just imagine anybody in the North, they're like, what are these two rednecks talking about? Can't their trucks and stuff. Well, see, we're not used to snow down here. Just like y'all, a lot of times up North, I've been to plenty of places up North, they don't even have air conditioning. So if it gets above 90, if it gets above 90, they're like, there's a heat wave. And I'm like, I'm all laughing at them. Like, what, 90? That feels pretty nice outside.
Oh, man, I wish it was 90. It was like 110 where we were at.
Yeah.
But, you're right. And because this is it's a rare event, and our winter events usually last for 3 days and they're not that severe, but that one particular winter was brutal. And that storm, oh my God, it shut the interstate down. It was bad, but oh my God, that was like working some Worked so many of them long shifts like that.
Well, see, since then I've gone on to many other things, but now I'm a home designer. I've been that way for about 14 years now. And and I remember telling my client, I was meeting with him the other day, and they said, you know, we'd love to have all these windows and everything, and we got lots of shade on the property, and we'd love to have this kind of indoor-outdoor feel where we could just throw open the doors and have parties where people can go out on the patio. And I'm thinking, well, what month are you planning on moving to California then? Because we have a whole 3 days a year that you can actually do that. You're either going to have mosquito hawks invading your house, or it's just going to be too dang hot or too humid to leave the door open. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know what? I didn't think about that. And I was like, yeah, well, that's why you hire me to do it.
It's crazy, but, man.
Yeah, it was. And I'll tell you, there was this. Well, you were talking about the gray monkey, and I didn't really remember that. And I thought you were talking about the monkey call that I got. But see, I remembered later that this was way after, and I had started working in an architectural firm in 2005. But then in 2008 and nine, you know, the bottom dropped out of the economy. And so the only other thing I knew to do was to either go back to the sheriff's department, which I did. But then that wasn't enough. And so I worked part-time security in downtown Austin. And it was the same type of position as before with Burns. I had gone down there and I was a night field supervisor and patrol officer. They did it slightly different. So one of the places that I went to because it's a hotel and it's got those orange juice and apple juice things where you can drink all you want for free, and it's super freaking cold. And of course, you know, you're out making your rounds at night, getting in and out of the car and stuff, and you're hot and you're sweating and you're dang thirsty. And so I went down there and I was sucking up their free cold orange juice like it was going to be took away from me here in a minute. You know, I was there for a reason. I was checking on the guard that was there. And so, and because I'd gone down a lot, I knew the night desk clerk too. And so we're standing there at the desk and he gets this call from one of the rooms and he's got his headset on, but we can hear this elevated tone. We couldn't understand what the person was saying, but we could tell that it was something really important. Somebody was really upset or scared or something. And so he's like, well, I've got two security officers down here right now. I'll send them right up. So he gets off and I'm like, dude, what was that about? Somebody getting the shit beat out of him or what? And he says, man, I don't know what's going on. Now, this is South downtown Austin. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody knows Austin, I mean, their motto is keep Austin weird. So there's just some weird people down here.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm thinking, oh, somebody's overdid it on the meth or something or whatever. So I'll go up and check. And I took old headache with me and I was going down this, it was one of those hotels where the doors are on the outside. So it's got this balcony that you walk down to get to the door.
Now, before you went up there, did they tell you what the call was about?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. He told me, he said, dude, you're not gonna believe this, but this lady thinks there's a monkey trying to get into her room. I was like, what? And that's why I thought when you were talking about the gray monkey earlier, I thought you were talking about my
story. That's right. You had a gray monkey too. But yeah, we had, if anything went wrong out there at the mall, we blame the gray monkey. But
yeah. And so I'm like, what? Are you serious? And he said, I don't know if she's nuts or high or she's obviously hallucinating. So let me know. Get up there and find out. Let me know if I need to call Health and Human Services down here, because that happened from time to time. And he had him on speed dial. And so so I grabbed the guard. You know, I didn't even have to go check it. I could have just said, hey, it's your problem. This is your post. I'm going to go to my next post. But I was like, I had to find out. I was like, man, curiosity killed the cat. So I was like, come on. So we go up there, and I knock on the door, and I hear this, what? I was like, ma'am, are you okay? Can you open the door? No. I'm like, ma'am, I got to know or I'm going to have to call the police. There's a monkey outside. Ma'am, please open the door. And she just refused to open the door. But I finally did get her to open the curtains enough to where we could talk and see each other. And she's pointing up behind me. And she kept saying stuff like, "He's right behind you." And I'm like, what the hell? So I turned around. I shined the flashlight up towards the roof of the ceiling of the awning we were standing under. And I'm like, I don't see anything. And the other guy says, well, I'm going to walk down here and see if maybe something, maybe it was a cat or something. I said, all right, well, I'm going to walk down this way. And I'm looking, and all of a sudden, I see this freaking monkey. Only after looking at him, it took me like 30 seconds. I'm sitting there staring at him for like 30 seconds, and I'm like, wait, that's not a monkey. What the hell? And I couldn't bring the name of the animal up in my head because we don't have those in Texas. It was a lemur.
It's not like you had Google.
A full-grown lemur.
And you didn't have like Google to look it up either.
No, we got that then. And I remember thinking, I don't even remember what the hell this thing's called. And I saw the rings. And so then I called back down to the front desk and I said, it's like a monkey, but it's not a monkey. It's like a cat, but it's not a cat. It's got a long tail. It's got these tiny little ears. And there's rings around the tail. And that guy says, wait, that sounds like a lemur. I was like, that's it. It's a lemur. And then he said, dude, I'm calling the cops now because now there's something, there's a gas leak up there or something. And I said, no, I'm dead serious, man. And so I guess he was somebody's pet and he escaped. I don't have a clue, but he was just sitting there staring at me. His little eyes were looking at me and I'm like, holy shit. Of course, yeah, this is way before Penguins of Madagascar, all that stuff. But so I'm like, well, it's King Julian up there.
I know, right? Man. Oh my God. There's just way too many stories, and unfortunately not a lot of time, so it has to be divided up. And I am so glad you called because you know, reliving this it was a lot of fun because me and you've done more hours together than we'd ever count. And and you were like, you know, best friend out there. And so,
well, and then not to mention,
I saw you more than I saw my own family, you know?
Yeah, me too. And as a matter of fact, we were so freaking close that we both decided we wanted to transfer down to the Houston branch and we were going to put both of our families in a house. And we did for a year.
We did that, yeah.
Said, and we called it the buddy system. We didn't have any problems paying our rent or anything because we were all living under the same roof.
Yeah, we had the buddy system, man. That was good times down there. And then, of course, that brings up even more stories. And that one we're going to hold back on until Halloween because we worked in probably the most haunted city in Texas, if not the United States. And the buildings that we worked in were, and no doubt in my mind, there was some strange stuff going on in there. That's our Halloween special. We're definitely going to talk about that for Halloween. But hey, man, thanks for calling. Thanks for coming in. And I enjoyed it. And I think everybody else will enjoy hearing these stories too. And I know there's a lot of security officers that they hear this, they can definitely relate.
Unfortunately.
We were the children of the night.
Yeah.
Well, man, it's been good talking to you. We're going to circle back around for Halloween and we got some, oh my God, those stories. Whoo! That's going to be
screaming
definitely a night to, oh yeah, the screaming demon. That's going to be a night to remember. And these are true stories. This ain't like just fake stuff or made up stuff. No, this stuff really happened. And
we lived through this stuff.
Oh, my God. And this was the most incredible. I mean, to this day, it's like those places there was, wow. It was, yeah, I never forget that. But
well, you know, the worst natural disaster in American history took place there. And I'm pretty sure why.
When over 8,000 plus people die in less than 24 hours. Yeah, you're going to get some haunts. You're going to have some spirits running around. But anyway, it's been nice talking to you. And we'll circle back around and do it, bud. You take care. Call me anytime. Say hi to the wife and family for me. And I'll catch you on the flip side, bud.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. And for everybody else out there, thank you for joining us here on the Rich Neil Show. If you need to leave a comment or get a hold of me, you can do that. RichNeilPodcast@gmail.com. RichNeilPodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. And we will catch you on the next one. Good day.
If you're ever in the Silver Spring, Maryland area and wish to become a member of the Rich Neil Podcast live studio audience, just go to www.thereisnostudioaudience.com. That's www.thereisnostudioaudience.com.